Yud Nissan, Thursday the 14th of April, by Malcolm Herman. Thoughts for the family Seder.
Thoughts from across the Haggadah. Appropriate for different levels and different age groups around their family Seder. What was that? That high, I'm not sure. Now, first of all, it's fascinating to think about the calculation in terms of how many tables, Seder night tables, is it back to your Yetzias Mitzrayim? How many Seder night tables is it from our own table back to your Yetzias Mitzrayim? So there's approximately 3,300 years since your Yetzias Mitzrayim, give or take. And then, of course, 3,300 years from your Yetzias Mitzrayim. Error. Now, if you think about it, the average, let's say, generation between parent and child is, let's say, 25 years. So 3,300 divided by 25, in my day at school, was 132. 3,300 divided by 25 was 132. But the Meister, of course, around many a Seder night table, there's at least two generations these days, Baruch Hashem, sometimes three generations. So let's say we say the average age gap between the oldest and the youngest at a Seder table is 50 years, between the oldest and the youngest. That means that the Meister, it's only 66 tables or so since Yetzias Mitzrayim as Hayom Hazeh. It's a very good way of shrinking the numbers. 66 tables from your Yetzias Mitzrayim as Hayom Hazeh. Don't you want to be 100 generations? If you go, the gap between the oldest and the youngest at Seder night table is about 50 years of error. So divide 3,200 by 50, it's basically 66. It brings it much closer to where we are. B'chol dar v'dar. I saw there's a very beautiful, amongst the many mamorim of the Sfonim Rebbe. He designates that Pesach is, he calls it the Rosh Hashanah of Emunah, as do others as well, the Rosh Hashanah of Emunah. And the concept, the essence is that the Emunah, of course, is the yisod of everything. All of our ruchnias growth depends on Emunah. Hence, that's the reason why that Pesach and Nissan is the launch of all the Chagim of the year. All the series of Chagim of the year, as the Maran explains, the concept of utilizing the Chagim for spiritual growth, everything begins with Pesach, because everything begins with Emunah. And that's why the Haggadah tells us, the more that we know, the more that we say, the more that we narrate, the more praiseworthy it is. Why so? If it was simply an intellectual exercise about recounting the story, if it was simply a lesson in history, then you get to a point of saturation. But because with Emunah there are no limits at all, a person could constantly increase the Emunah. So therefore, because the process of ingraining Emunah is about living Emunah. When you live Emunah, then you ingrain Emunah. And therefore, because Seder night is the beginning of Pesach and Rosh Hashanah of Emunah, therefore when we talk about it, we ingrain it, it becomes more and more part of us. It says beautifully, quite beautifully, the Torah tells us, Rishonu l'chod she'hashanah. That Nisan is the beginnings of all the hishkachus of the year. All the hishkachus of the year a person can have in Emunah, all the hishkachus and ruchnius a person has, everything stems and starts from Pesach. Rishon l'chodesh Hashanah is the Rish, the beginnings of all the hishkachus of the year. In fact, he says, and I haven't seen it quite put this way before, there are different halakim in Emunah that we know. He says that in teaching Emunah and being mashish Emunah for ourselves, there are three aspects that we have to recognize. And all of those three aspects are encapsulated within Yetzias Mitzrayim. Number one, of course, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei Olam. Number two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Creator. Number one is Hashem created. Number two is Hashgacha Pratis. That Hashem has a particular association with each and every one of us. Number three, he says, is a part of Emunah is to recognize Hashem Bachavonu. That we are the Amma Nivcha, that we are the select nation, that we have this unique relationship with Hashem. And all of those three, he says, are part and parcel of the mitzvah of Emunah, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu created, Hashgacha Pratis, and the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that we are the Amma Nivcha. And all of that happens via the Yetzias Mitzrayim. The vehicle, the Yetzias Mitzrayim is the vehicle for that. And that's why, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu presents us with the Sefer Dibros, the first that says the Dibros is not Ani Hashem Lekecha that created heaven and earth. The first is Hashem Tzitzicha Meretz Yisrael, because all of those three components were captured via Yetzias Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu turns the whole world upside down. We will see later on when we come to the Makkos, also brought by the Sfonim Rebbe, the Hashgacha Pratis that was implicit within the Makkos, explicit within the Makkos, and finally everything was done for Klal Yisrael. So within Yetzias Mitzrayim, all of those components become are evident. says very beautifully that Chayav Yehudi Lahamin Shehu Ma'amin. Chayav Yehudi Lahamin Shehu Ma'amin. That a Yid is obligated to believe that he believes. In other words, as he puts it, it's a bit like the sun behind the clouds. Sometimes life has challenges, sometimes we have questions, sometimes we wonder what's going on, and sometimes we question our own emunah. But Chayav Yehudi Lahamin Shehu Ma'amin. To know and to believe that we believe, and that's who we are, that's it. We'll come back to that later on in terms of how that references through the Makkas and how these aspects through the Makkas. But that's a beautiful aspect. I saw that Rav Shimon Shvab, actually in his Pirish on the Siddur, has at the back of it, they've captured some shiurim that he gave on the Haggadah as well. And there he emphasizes that the mitzvah Sifrei Tzitzchayim is to bring out the details of the Sipur, as we know. But he has an interesting analysis of Yachas. First of all, Agav, as a side, he has a certain reservation about the minhag of encouraging children to steal the Afikoman. He says that encouraging children to steal under all circumstances is not a minhag toiva. But he gives a beautiful pshat in the minhag of that the children get some kind of prize for it afterwards. What's pshat? He says that Yachas represents Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh. We take the matter, we break it in two. And we leave the smaller half on the Seder plate and we hide the larger half away. Like an oni would do. But the smaller half of the Seder plate remains with the moror, remains with the chorosis. That represents Olam Hazeh. Olam Hazeh, this represents our world, this life, which has its sweetness, it has its bitterness, it has its challenges, has all of that, the whole range of life's experiences. But then you put half of it away. Half away is the hidden half that is ours. That's the Olam Hazeh. The hidden half that is ours, which is eaten ala sova. It's eaten when a person is satisfied, a person is satiated, a person has done what he has to do. There, HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings out for him Olam Haba. Olam Haba. And that's what's represented by the matter that's hidden away. Very nice idea. It says, and that's why perhaps the minig is that the children get some kind of prize, as it were, a stickler remez, that Achamei Vesem Shona, there is a prize. I don't think you can negotiate then. But Achamei Vesem Shona, there is a prize. And therefore, after the Seder, after the mitzvahs, there is Yeshkar. I'd like to bring in, although he doesn't bring it, but I don't know how well known this is, the beautiful mashal of the Chofetz Chaim. Actually, the Chofetz Chaim says it in reference to Shabbos. But it absolutely captures this in terms of Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba. And it would be a beautiful idea to add to the Seder or to add during the meal. Chofetz Chaim brings a story of the marketeer who's selling potatoes in the marketplace. Every day he sells a few sacks of his potatoes, and then one day, to put it in modern day parlance, you know, the Quintin's crisp van drives up, and the manager gets out. He says, we've got a problem, we can't get our potatoes from Cyprus, and we need all the potato sacks you can get. Every sack that you've got, we need. Now this simple farmer's never sold every sack on one day before. It's an unbelievable day, and these two shtarkers get out of the van, and they start loading the sacks as fast as they can from his market stall into this juggernaut. And he says, wait, slow down, I can't keep track of how many sacks you're taking. I don't know how many I've got, I just bring them all, I don't know how many I've got. So the manager, a little impatient, says to him, look, I'll tell you what we'll do. How much is each sack? £10. Fine. What we'll do is, for every sack we put in the van, we'll put a pound on the table. And at the end of the loading, we'll give you £10 for every pound. And that's what they do. Sacks in the van, pound on the table. Sacks in the van, pound on the table. There's a little pound coin. Pound coins, a tower of pound coins, it's building up. And this simple farmer looks at these pound coins and thinks to himself, wow, there's quite a lot of money over there. This manager doesn't look as though he's going to miss a few pound coins. And while the manager's not looking, he starts stealing the pound coins. Chofetz Chaim says, Alinyan Shabbos, the person who thinks they work on Shabbos and they do better than they do during the week, they're stealing from themselves the bracha of parnasa the Shabbos brings. There's also a beautiful mashal for Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. That we know that everything we do in this world, every mitzvah we do in this world, is worth so much more in olamos beyond our own world. And sometimes we don't take those opportunities that we can do, and we steal from ourselves from what is ours in the next world. As I said, in terms of the thoughts of Shimon Shvab, that's what it exemplifies. The bigger half is hidden away. Bigger half is hidden away. If we keep preserving and doing what we're doing here, then that translates into so much more in olamos elsewhere. Mitchila. We come to Midchila, only Avodah Zorah. So we know the Machlokas and the Gemara in Pesachim as to Maskil B'Gnus and Psalm Shvach, Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, as to which aspect is Gnus, which is the start, which is Gnus. Is it Avodah Mayinu, or is it here in terms of describing our Avodah Zorah? So Rav says it's Midchila, and Shmuel says it's Avodah Mayinu. And basically the Machlokas is different ways of analysing the Machlokas, but one is, do we focus on our spiritual degradation, or do we focus on our physical degradation? Avodah Zarah is a focus on our physical degradation, and Melechila is a focus on our spiritual degradation. Others say that the machlokus is whether we focus on the nes or we focus on the tragedy. Melechila, in essence, is a focus more on the tragedy, which begins the whole parashiyos there, which describe the avdus. And Avodah Mayinu, the focus is, starts off with Avodah Mayinu, but the Ilula, the first book that brought this out, the focus is more on the solution, the nes. Take a step back for a second, if I may put it a little bit graphically. The whole concept of Maskel Ganus is a very interesting concept. Think about it this way. Let's imagine that you are speaking at a friend's, as a daughter's chasna, or a bar mitzvah. And you get up on the chasna in front of everybody else, and you say there, you know, Yossi, Baruch Hashem, it's so nice to see you at your son's bar mitzvah, daughter's chasna. I remember when I came to visit you in prison. Who would have thought, you know, I came to visit you inside, and who would have thought today you're standing at the chasna? It's just, quite a number of mafashim ask, Maskel Ganus, why do we have to have Maskel Ganus? So the Maharal talks about the idea that we only really appreciate the Shvach in terms of contrast. But I saw two other pshatim in terms of this. One is that I saw B'Shem Nekodesh and Maggid, right, just a very simple and very beautiful idea. If I may put it in my terms. He says that really, there are two types of people around. There are those people who are constantly blaming what they things have. I always call them the if-only people. If only I would have had a better education, if only I would have spent longer in yeshiva, if only my wife was this, if only my wife wasn't this, if only people. The whole of life is expended on if only. What if only things had been different, how would be different? And the other people are the only ifs. Not the only if only, but the only ifs. A recognition that life is what it is, the Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us anisyonus, and we have to only if we buckle down and get on with it and make the best of what a Kodesh Baruch Hu gives us, then we can achieve. Don't spend all of our lives in the dream world of if only, focus on the world of reality of only if. So the Kodesh and Maggid, this is what God is telling us. Maybe the people sitting around the table think to themselves, you know, Ruchni is for me, Tveikus to Kodesh Baruch Hu for me, what can I do if only my parents, if only. Says, I've got to know Medchila, you know where we started off? We were over the Avodah Zarah. That was our antecedents. That was our history. That was our ancestry. Over the Avodah Zarah. For Achshav, Kervana, Makom Avodaso. If you think you can't do it, we did it. We moved on. We didn't focus on the world if only. We just did what we had to do. That's how the Kodesh and Maggid puts it. Very, very beautifully. Rav Dessner, and I will say, if I've understood him properly, in his one of his Mamorim on Pesach, says the following idea, also on Midchila. And also ask the Kasha why we have Midchila in the Haggadah, why we go so far back, and why we start off with this point of degradation. So he says that what Haggadah is accentuating is the strength of character and the determination of Avram Avinu. It's interesting, when we normally talk about Avram, we associate Avram with Chesed. Of course. And Chesed is a sense of love for other people, a sense of inclusiveness of other people. But if we take a step back and think about who Avram Avinu was, as Rav Dessner puts it, he took issue with the whole world. We know he was the Ish Ivri. He stood on one side of the riverbank, the whole world in the world said he was a Meshuggah. He stood at issue with the whole world. You can just imagine his family and everyone negotiating with him. You have to go so far. You have to be so dogmatic. And he said, no, you're wrong and I am right. I don't care if I'm the only person right. He was absolutely determined, had an unbelievable I will, and didn't matter if no one in the world agreed with him. He knew he was absolutely right. Says Rav Dessner, with his determination, he rooted into the DNA, the spiritual DNA of Klal Yisrael, in the Kudus HaKadusha, an aspect of Kudusha, a component of Kudusha, that was absolutely indestructible, completely and absolutely indestructible. And it's only that in the Kudus HaKadusha that really was the point of rescue of Klal Yisrael and Mitzrayim. We know that they descended down to the Memtes Shari to among the 49 levels of impurity, and that 50th level was what saved them. The Kodesh Baruch Hu brought them out while they could still be salvaged with that 50th level. As I said, if I understood them correctly, that 50th level was this Kudush HaKadusha, which was rooted into their very being by Avram Avinu. And therefore, and that was the promise of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, because he was so determined, because he would not compromise, because he would not give in, therefore, he gave us this indestructible component. He wouldn't compromise, he wouldn't relinquish, this became part of us, that could never be compromised, could never be relinquished. And therefore, it then follows on, the reason why this is in the Haggadah, is because it was this component that was our salvation. The Kodesh Baruch Hu could save us while we could still be salvaged. It was this component that was our salvation. It was a direct legacy of the determination of Avram Avinu. And therefore the Haggadah goes on, Baruch Shem after Chosel Yisrael. The Kodesh Baruch Hu kept his promise to Klal Yisrael. What was his promise? His promise was this indestructible component. And therefore, it's very interesting, the Rav Shemesh Fab notes, again in the same lines, and now, doesn't say Va'oz Kervonu HaMakom HaMadosa, and then, we were originally Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought us. No, it says, and now, the implication being that it has to be a constant and ongoing aspect. It's chayrus for our own past, but it has to be an immediacy of now. The idea that yes, we take our past from our avos, but it has to become ours on a constant ongoing basis. You notice in the Amidah as well, we start off and we bow, l'keinu l'kei avoseinu. We take our presence before our Kadosh Baruch Hu because we are the Bnei Avram Yitzchak and Yaakov. That's our right to be there, to stand before Hashem. But then Mogen Avram, this is we bow Mogen Avram because we say to Hashem that just as Avram created his own yichus, so we also create our own yichus. We stand before Hashem ready to forge our own path, to be pioneers in our own right. We have to feel it as an immediacy now, not simply as a legacy of the past. And it struck me that the Maharal says something very similar in the previous paragraph, because the whole concept of Hischadshus and of Chayrus and of the first month of the year is that it has no time frame. It's detached from all else. It's the very beginning. There was no beginning before this point in time. When Klal Yisrael were born in Mitzrayim, there was no beginning, if you like, in terms of their history as a nation before this point in time. Says Maharal, that's why there's a Havamina that we might start from Rosh Chodesh. Maybe it's because Rosh Chodesh was the month of Nisan, which was Rosh Chodesh, that whole month had within it the seeds of beginning, the seeds of newness, the seeds of... And therefore, we might thought to start from Rosh Chodesh, which fits with the idea that this is a new beginning for us, outside of time. It has no framework prior to this. Okay. Let's highlight very briefly some of the... in terms of the four Pesukim in the Haggadah, the main Pesukim in the Haggadah, which detail the history. I'd like to share with you one or two highlights from these two over here. The Torah, the Haggadah tells, "V'hisham l'goy melamed shahoy Yisrael mutzionim sham." With Klal Yisrael settled in Mitzrayim, and they stood out there. They excelled there. So Akasha, which I've often thought of, I saw this year Torah in Rav Moshe Sternberg's Haggadah, is we tend to talk about two different aspects of Klal Yisrael, which are contradictory. On the one hand, we say that they had sunk to the Memtes Sharitum. On the other hand, we say that they didn't change their name, they didn't change their language, and they didn't change their dress. So how do those two things stim? So I've always understood that it means that they held on to something. But actually, he puts it in the following terms, and he puts it with a contemporary slant. He says, basically what it means is, they took a certain pride in the fact that they were descended from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov was a famous figure in the history of Egypt, and Yosef was a famous figure in the history of Egypt. So they felt a certain pride in their identity. And that pride was expressed in the fact that they retained those external trappings of their identity. Their clothes, their language, and their names. But he says that clearly was not enough to save them from descending into Memtesh Charitum. Pride in being a Yid is not enough. It's not enough. You have to live like a Yid, and you have to think like a Yid. You can be proud to be a Jew, but can still eat Chazat Reif, unfortunately. Unfortunately, and that by itself, so that pride is too external. Yes, it was important, and it was their link, and perhaps it was their when Moshe Rabbeinu came back to them, they knew who they were. It was enough to be Mahura, the spark again, but that pride by itself did not stop them from descending to Memtaz Shari Tuma. In the Pasuk Vayero Sonu HaMitzrim, again, Moshe Sternbuch brings, although I've seen this elsewhere as well, really the grammar of this, translated by Yerei Yosan and Mitzrayim, did bad to us. They were wicked to us, did evil to us. So it should actually say, Vayerei Lonu HaMitzrayim. If it was to us, it should say, Vayerei Lonu. So what's Pshat Vayerei Yosanu? It means they turned us into evil. They turned us into evil. Two Pshatim. Either Pshat is, one of which I don't remember I saw, but either Pshat is, they turn one yid against another. That's what they did. They turned one yid against another. They made one yid the taskmaster over the others, and they turned us into evil. The other pshat, which is such a powerful pshat, is that in order to enslave a people, you have to destroy their minds. Destroy their belief in themselves. If enough times you tell a person you're nobody, you're rubbish, you're pathetic, you're incapable, you'll never escape from here, you destroy the very essence of the human being. That's pshat. They destroyed us in our own minds such that we had no ability to see ourselves with any sense of pride. Avshalom Shapol Hirsch has got a whole beautiful analysis of Korban Pesach, how the whole process of Korban Pesach was to restore our belief in ourselves, to take possession of us once again, to sit in family groups once again. So as we know, the Chinuch says one of the reasons why they're not allowed to break a bone of Korban Pesach was they should eat like Malachim. They should begin to feel one that they are Malachim. A hungry person crunches through everything he has, but a melech, a king, doesn't do that. And therefore, the whole process of Korban Pesach was to restore our belief in ourselves, which had been destroyed by the Mitzrayim. In the subsequent Pesukim, Aniv Elohim Malach. So again, Moshe Stemach says that, quoting, Kirachas Hashem as Toyas Batzion, Kadosh Baruch Hu was prepared to step in to save Klal Yisrael when the Malachim couldn't do it. He says that only a mother can really cope with the dirt that's been created by the child. A mother can change a child's nappy. It's much more difficult to change somebody else's child's nappy. One's own child's nappy you can change, if one has to. But, it says here, beautifully, that Aniv Elohim Malach, that the Malachim, Klal Yisrael, were in Nemteh Shari Tumah. The Malachim couldn't go there. But Kadosh Baruch Hu, with his love for Klal Yisrael, he could step in. He says, I'll do it myself, I'll take care of them, they're my children, I'll look after them myself. Again, just points that accentuate the Avas Hashem within the Haggadah itself. Also, we say in the Haggadah, Mizrein HaTzuyah Zu HaCherev. So actually, if you think about it, what does it mean, Zu HaCherev? Where was the Cherev in Mitzrayim? Not one of the Makkos really involved Cherev. Not one of the Makkos involved Cherev. So again, Moshe Steinbuch says that it was the Cherev of Paro, the Mitzrayim was scared of. They were scared of him, because he was a dictator. But I saw some time ago, and I'm afraid I don't remember the Makkor now, but I saw some time ago, that I mean the Torah tells us, by the time it came to the end of the Makkos, the Mitzrayim were pleading with Pharaoh to let us go. Haterem teda ki avdaris. Can't you see, the infrastructure of the land is being destroyed. These Makkos have lasted almost a year. The Nile was attacked. Everything that was ours was attacked. What do you want to do? And ultimately, what Pharaoh did was, Pharaoh placed his own self-aggrandizement before the infrastructure of his country. He was a dictator, been a dictator for many, 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 many years. But when it actually came to it, although he projected an image of being the protector of the country, he was prepared to sacrifice his whole country rather than him giving in. That was more important to him. What happens? When you have a situation like that, you end up with civil war. You end up with civil war. One person takes a sword against the other person. You end up with civil war. Marcus, that's it. So entry is the This is one Egyptian fighting another Egyptian. There were the pro-Pharaohites and there were Kenegat Pharaohites. And they fought against each other. The situation is civil war, while the dictator watched his infrastructure being destroyed around him. Now, let's come to the Makkos. So the Makkos, we heard it splits into three groups. Very well known, most of the Pshatim are the three groups. Below ground, at a living level, and from above the ground. Mamloes talks about the fact that they, the Makkos, we know the first of each two groups was with a warning. The third group was without a warning. He says the first warning was always a public warning. And the second warning was private, and the third one was no warning. He also says that the first of the three groups are triggered by Moshe, by Aaron. You know, the first group's by Aaron. The third group was Moshe Rabbeinu, first group Aaron, second group Moshe Rabbeinu, and the third group Hakadosh Baruch Hu himself. The Klei Yakar in the Chumash says that actually, this former Rebbe brings this in his Maimon and Emunah, says that the three groups can be split a different way as well. That Pharaoh denied three aspects of Emunah, denied the very existence of Hashem, denied Hashkacha Pratis, and also denied that even if there was a God, he could literally turn creation upside down. And the three groups accentuate how wrong he was in each of these three areas. And I won't go through all, but it's worth reading the Klei Yakar, not only the Klei Yakar, it's a beautiful Klei Yakar, which shows how every Makkah fits into this process, these brackets. The first group, he denied the existence of Hashem. And he maintained that they had their own gods, well, the attacks and the Makkahs. You can see, for example, the dam was against the Nile, which was their god, and demonstrated that your god is of no value whatsoever. The second group, for example, which was the in terms of Hashkacha Pratis, so both the plagues, all the plagues are there, Adash. So, for example, the plague of Devah. Where it's the plague where Pharaoh himself, Yishlach Paro in a low mason, Mikli Yisrael Adechot. The only plague where Pharaoh seems to send out his spies to find out what actually happened, the plague of Devah. Why so? You have two animals drinking from the same trough. And we know that normally, there are, at least according to many, there's an Ashkacha Potis in reference to animals. Ashkacha Potis is reference to Klal Yisrael, to human beings, but not to animals. But here, the Ashkacha Potis, where it was actually reference to animals as well. And therefore, two animals drinking from the same trough, one animal drops dead, the other one doesn't. The second group illustrated Hashkacha Pratis, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, down to Minyan Shiach. And a third group, where Pharaoh denied the fact that Hashem could turn the whole world upside down, the day changed completely. The day became night, choshech, like a choshech, day became night. And therefore each of these groups attacked Pharaoh, not just militarily, but ideologically, demonstrating that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there, there's Hashgacha Pratis, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu turned the whole world order upside down, if that was necessary, for the sake of Klal Yisrael. Let me just finish off, perhaps, with, if you don't mind, I did actually speak on Magadha in 2006, as I'm sure you recall. But I'm going to share two ideas from there, if I may, because I say them every year, say them night, so once every 5 years, here is also. There's a very, very beautiful analysis of the Maharal on the number 15, which features throughout the Haggadah. You've got the 15 Kadesh Urchats. It's really not right to do it so briefly, but Kadesh Urchats is 15 Sedarim of the Seder. So the 15 always represents ascent. We're sitting on down on the 15th of the month of Nisan. Sukkot is the 15th. 15th represents ascent. The moon is at its height at the 15th. The She'amal is the 15 steps. 15 always represents climbing to an ascent. When it comes to Dayenu, there are also, as it happens, there are 14 Dayenus, but there are 15 things for which we say Dayenu for. Because the first Dayenus is for the couplet of the first two items. So 15 represents an ascent, climbing from below all the way up. And actually Dayenu is split into three groups. First group is HaKadosh Baruch Hu taking us out of Mitzrayim. The third group is care for us within the Midbar. And the second group is care for us within the Midbar. And the third group is bringing us close to Him, to Beis HaMechira. Let me just finish with one thought, one story, which I heard from Rabbi Moshe Kupitz in Manchester, on Haggadah. It's a beautiful story which I think also captures so much of what Sayyidina is all about and takes us back full circle to the Slama Rebbe. I don't remember the name of the Rav, a Rav in Eastern Europe, and he used to have a particular routine. He would spend his day learning as a Dayan, and then he would come home for an hour for supper, and that was it. Then he would go back into the base of Medrash and be available for hours and hours to answer Shilas. And his Rebbe was always very particular to make sure that he had a decent supper and he could go back to what he had to do. One day she makes fish for supper, and the fish is a bit hot. So, in order to cool the fish down, she puts it temporarily outside the back door. Comes back a few minutes later, the local village cat has helped itself to the Rebbe's supper. So there's a whole commotion, and the Rebbe is very worried, what's the Rebbe going to say, and he needs his fish, he needs his supper. So, Ichleis, the local chevron, Yankele, is walking past, sees a commotion in the Rebbe's house, and he comes in. So he says that the Rebbe tells him what happened, the cat and the fish, don't worry, I'll go and speak to the Rav, I'll warn him before he comes home, that this is what's happened. What are you going to say? Leave it to me. Goes to Rav. The Rav is there, davening Maariv, and takes three steps back. So Mira finishes Maariv, and Yankel is standing behind him, and Yankel says to him, Rebbe, I must ask you a question. He says, Yankel, you know my routine by now, as well as everybody else. I'm here, I'll be back in an hour's time, ask many questions tonight. He says, Rebbe, I must ask this question now, it's an emergency. He says, what is it, life and death? He says, no, he says, more than that. He says, I've got Sveikus and Emunah. Sveikus and Emunah? He says, yeah, right, Rebbe, you wouldn't want to leave me with Sveikus and Emunah for an hour, would you? To leave a Yid with a Sveikus and Emunah for an hour? How can you do that? So, okay, what is it? He says, Rebbe, I'm learning the Haggadah, and I came to Chaggadah. Now look at the sequence in the Haggadah. The kid in the Haggadah, Chaggadah, did nothing wrong. That means the kid was innocent, the cat was guilty. The dog was innocent, the stick was guilty. The fire was innocent, the water was guilty. The ox was innocent, the slaughter was guilty. Malach Mav was innocent. Rebbe, what's the conclusion of the Haggadah? The last one in the Haggadah is a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Smash by Kodesh Baruch Hu, did something wrong. I've got Sveikus in me. So the Rebbe says to him, Yankel, you've gone the wrong way around. You've always got to start the right way around. They start with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Everything Kodesh Baruch Hu does is correct. No shadow about it. Kodesh Baruch Hu did the right thing. The Malach Malavis was wrong. The Shochet was right. The ox was wrong. The water was right. The fire was wrong. The dog was... I've got the wrong way around. Sorry. Kodesh Baruch Hu, too fast. Kodesh Baruch Hu did the right thing. The Malach Malavis did the wrong thing. The slaughterer was right. The ox was wrong. The water was right. The fire was wrong. The stick was right. The dog was wrong. The cat was right. He stops from that point as Rebbe. If the cat was right, you've got no supper. Now, for the Meister within this story is a beautiful idea. The point's like this. If you start off with the wrong premise in Emunah, you'll go wrong. There's a trajectory. You'll go wrong. Start off without a richtig Emunah, without it solid, without it founded. You'll go wrong. It may take a while, it may take two steps, three steps, it may take one generation, Rahman Islam, two generations, but you'll go wrong. Pesach is about restoring Emunah. It's the Rosh Hashanah of Emunah for ourselves, for our children, for Einiklach. It's about restoring Emunah so that by the time it comes to the end of the Haggadah, you're ready to face it the year ahead with a restored Emunah, which will give us an extra Tzveikus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu.